Welcome to the Potter Discussion.
Welcome back to the Potter Discussion, discussing Harry Potter, Fantastic Beasts, and the Wizarding World fandom. I'm your host, Oscar, and this is episode 229. Thank you, everyone, for joining me today on this lovely day. It is, of course, a pleasure to be recording to you. So today we are talking about some of the quintessential Hogwarts things. Really, what makes Hogwarts, Hogwarts? You're going to be saying that a lot in this episode. Hogwarts, Hogwarts, Hogwarts. So what I've done is chosen a few items, a few places, a few little quirks about the castle that really make it stand out. And really, my thinking behind them is, if they weren't here, would the castle really be the same? So that's kind of the question we're going to be thinking about. You know, what are the core elements of the story in the castle? So that is what we are going to be investigating today. So I hope you stick around. If you like what you hear, consider sending me an email. My email is thepotterdiscussion@gmail.com. That is thepotterdiscussion@gmail.com. That's a great place to reach me if you have any questions, comments, or topics that you'd like to hear on the show. You can also go to thepotterdiscussion.com, which is a great place to see all the contact forms, see that email, and a bunch of all the episodes. I just recently updated it, so there's all the good stuff on there. So thepotterdiscussion.com is another great place to do that. But without further ado, let's get into today's episode. The very first thing on the list is the Owlry. The Owlry is probably the most Hogwarts thing that I could think of. I mean, of course you could say, like, well, there's, I don't know, any number of things on this list. But the Owlry came to mind first, because what I was really thinking is, we don't really hear about a lot of other wizarding schools using Owlries. Well, first of all, we don't really hear much about other wizarding schools. So it is very possible that they have an Owlry, but I think Hogwarts in particular, and perhaps kind of like the UK wizarding system, uses owls primarily as their form of contact, because of course they can't exactly send an email or a text to their friends. They've got to use an owl. So I mean, of course, I'm sure that owls are used somehow in other parts of the world, but in the UK it is definitely owls are the main part of wizarding communication. And the Owlry at Hogwarts is a great example of this, because that's where all the owls go. That's where Hedwig lives. And I mean, really, we're kind of thinking about the symbolism here. Hedwig is really a symbol of the story. She's really a kind of a, well, I guess it's a he in the story technically, but Hedwig is kind of, you know, the symbol. And we have like the circle glasses, the lightning scar, and Hedwig. That's kind of what we got in terms of, you know, if we could choose one picture to represent Harry Potter as a whole, you'd probably choose Hogwarts. Maybe you would choose a picture of Harry, maybe, and then also a picture of Hedwig. I think those are really some of the best examples that we have. So the Owlry is definitely on this list. I think it has so much, you know, potential as a kind of a wizarding place. And I think another reason why it's, well, forgive me, why it's so magical is because it's a muggle kind of thing, you know, like it's not like it is like strictly for wizarding use, because almost, I mean, the places that are kind of shared by wizards and muggles are almost the most magical, because it really kind of shows the blurred boundaries between the worlds. I think, although it might be different, like I don't think a muggle zoo would have like an owlry. I think that might be a little bit off. And I don't think they really exist anywhere, but it's not like it's a completely foreign concept. Like, for example, you know, a troll den might be a little bit difficult to kind of swallow for a muggle, you know, because of course there are no trolls and that just doesn't exist. So thinking about that from a muggle's perspective is impossible, because there's no idea what those are. But an owlry is a completely normal place. And I mean, they have like places for birds. I mean, like trucks transport birds, and birds live in, first of all, everywhere, but also in, you know, like zoos. They have bird cages, and that, like, that's a thing. And also birds, like, live in places, and there are a lot of them. Like, that's just a thing that exists. So an owlry really isn't a concept that's too hard to understand. And I mean, as I think owls carrying letters is definitely maybe a little strange, but I don't think a muggle would, you know, say, oh my gosh, the magical world's exposed. I see that, you know, owl carrying that letter. I know exactly what it's doing. It's the wizarding world's real. Like, I don't think anyone would think that, of course. I mean, well, if, first of all, if we saw an owl carrying a letter, I think we would think, oh boy, something's up. But a muggle, without having the books in front of him, I think wouldn't be too shocked by the idea of an owlry. So I think that's why it's so it's such a cool place. And then thinking, well, it's a muggle idea, but it's on Hogwarts grounds, and it's just really, really cool to film in the Harry Potter studios in Leaviston. They have like the huge model of Hogwarts, and the owlry is, you know, standing of, you know, like a post in the distance. And in the fourth book, when Harry's walking there and he gets the letters from Sirius and all that, like, it's a great, it's kind of a great place as like a connection to the world that might be, you know, a phone or a computer to someone else. But it's the owlry to wizard, so there you go. And I think without the owlry, it would be a difficult time. You know, at Hogwarts, I think, well, they wouldn't have their letters. I mean, owls would have to either live in the forest or find somewhere else, or just kind of float around until they need to send a letter or get something or whatever. But so the owls might have a difficult time of it, but also there would be, you know, less of a feeling of, you know, like, this is a magical place and this is separated, so we need a place to contact. I think the owlry kind of adds that layer of separation, which is another very interesting part of this. Without the owlry, it's, you know, you can just walk down the road and find muggles, you know, that's kind of, which is probably true to some degree. I mean, if you walked for long enough, you could probably find someone. But the owlry is just kind of like, you know, almost a symbol of, you know, it's pretty far away. You know, this is a outpost of magic, and definitely don't come looking or going. So it's the owlry is a very interesting place, and that's a very good thing to mention here. So the owlry is definitely one of those things that I think, you know, if Hogwarts didn't have it, where would we really be, you know? And because of all the reasons I just mentioned, it is kind of a blur between the muggle and wizarding worlds, but at the same time, it's probably the biggest barrier there is. Of course, excluding, you know, the walls and all the enchantments around the castle, but the owlry is kind of the, it's not really a line of defense. I mean, I don't really think it would do much in terms of, you know, the Battle of Hogwarts. I'm not sure how effective an owlry would be, but it's the barrier between Hogwarts and the rest of the world, which I think is magical. But that is the first item on the list, so let's move on. The next things I want to discuss, plural, is a package deal, because I kind of thinking of them as very similar, and that is the Great Hall and the Sorting Hat. So I think this also goes without saying that the Great Hall is, I mean, probably it's very symbolic of Hogwarts. And I think, you know, that's why, for example, in The Half-Blood Prince, that's why when the Death Eaters are escaping, you know, Bellatrix runs through and destroys the Great Hall, because that's just showing, you know, I'm destroying Hogwarts, you know, this is a fatal blow. And she, you know, blows out all the candles and smashes the plates and all that, you know. Some of the most important scenes take place in the Great Hall, which is a important thing to note. And the Sorting Hat also does its job in the Great Hall, which is why I kind of grouped them here together. Because the Sorting Hat, if you can believe it, sorts the students in the Great Hall. And that's another kind of, you know, core magical object of the story. The Sorting Hat is, you know, it doesn't have a huge job, but it, when it's needed, it really does come in handy. I think the Sword of Gryffindor is what I'm thinking of here. And it was used at the beginning of the story and at the end. You know, when Harry was sorted, he said, "Not Slytherin, not Slytherin." That's a wonderful, you know, kind of beginning to his story arc. And then at the end, his, you know, the Sorting Hat's final act of drawing the Sword of Gryffindor from, or Neville drew the Sword of Gryffindor and killed Nagini, which is a great end to his arc. So I think it was really a very important, now, of course, it was important to the story, but also that's kind of, I think, you know, kind of a symbol. And I think what we'll find here is one, like, the thing that really ties all these objects and places to the castle, to the story, is kind of the symbolism of what they mean and where they appear and how often and kind of what's their importance. So I think the sorting hat here is kind of the symbol of, I think Gryffindor is too, almost too specific, because I don't think, I mean, yes, I think it, you know, the rule is a worthy Gryffindor can draw the sword from the hat, but I'm sure if someone else, like, who was really worthy did, I'm sure they could do it. I mean, maybe not, but I don't think the Gryffindor is really the important part. I think it's just the fact that you're worthy and you can kind of, it's like drawing the sword from the stone. I mean, of course, you know, it has to be like the king, or I don't really know the story of King Arthur very well, but, you know, it has to be the king of Lancelot or whatever it is. I have no idea. I bet someone's cringing out of that. I'm so sorry, but it's kind of like the sword from the stone, where not everyone can do it. That's kind of what I'm getting at here. Not everyone can do it, but it's not exactly a separation of house, although that's kind of what it's drawn out to be, and maybe that is what it is. That's kind of the first thing the hat looks for, but I don't know. I just don't know. So without the sorting hat, I think we would have to kind of do some fancy footwork here, because how would, for example, in the Chamber of Secrets, how does Harry get the sword? I think Fox would just have to bring it, just like carry it and drop it, and he catches it. But that's just not exactly that good. I mean, of course that makes sense, because that's kind of what Fox did anyway. You know, Fox brought the hat, which gave Harry the sword. But I think it's the degree of separation that's important there. So as much as Fox, you know, helped out with that, if Fox just like flew down there carrying the sword, I mean, that would be helpful, but it wouldn't mean the same thing. I think Harry has to kind of draw it himself, which he does, and that's why it's such a meaningful moment. And then also in the Deathly Hallows, when Neville draws the sword for himself, I think that's why it's just such a big moment, because he did it, you know. And the Sorting Hat does all of its you know, all of its things in the Great Hall, which is another great example. I mean, all those floating candles are just like such a Harry Potter thing. I mean, of course, floating candles exist elsewhere in other stories, I should say, but Harry Potter is like the floating candle story. I mean, come on, they even tried to do it for real on the film set, and the very first film, they tried to actually have a bunch of floating candles, which worked for a while, but then it melted through the wire and fell on the students, which wasn't great. But that just goes to show that, you know, even they recognize, even the filmmakers of the first movie recognize that it is the floating candles, the Great Hall, that makes it just so special. So the floating candles in the Great Hall, you know, and then of course there's like the pumpkins and all that. The Great Hall is where a lot of the magic happens, you know. And I think that, you know, of course that's where they eat, but that's also where a lot of, like, for example, the Snape and McGonagall duel occurred in the Deathly Hallows. That's a good example, and it's pretty important. And there's a lot happening. I mean, that's where Harry revealed himself. That's where the Order, you know, came in. That's kind of the Great Hall is kind of the beginning and ending almost. And I think that's kind of where the Sorting Hat ties in, because we've already discussed how the Sorting Hat was kind of the beginning of Harry's journey and also kind of the end. And that's kind of what the Great Hall is as well. You know, he entered Hogwarts in the Great Hall, he was sorted in the Great Hall, and he really began his journey. If the Sorting Hat in the Great Hall had sorted him into a different house, he would have had a very different life. But it was the decision was made, he said, not Slytherin, and the house said, all right, and the hat gave him into Gryffindor in the Great Hall, Sorting Hat, there you go. Those who are, or seem to be tied together a lot. And then, like we're just saying, in the Deathly Hallows, that's where the duel happens, that's where the Order comes in, that's where he reveals himself, and it's near the Great, well, I mean, the book and the film is different, but Neville takes the sword and kills Nagini, and the final duel happens in the Great Hall. I mean, Harry and I mean, this is not the film here, but Voldemort and Harry have the final duel in the Great Hall with everyone watching. I mean, that's got to mean something, right? So we could definitely talk about this for a long time, but I hope you can understand that the Great Hall and the Sorting Hat not only are tied together, but are two very important parts of Hogwarts that would be remiss if we didn't have them. So there you go. That is number two. Let's move on. Now, moving on, there's another part of the castle that I think is so quintessentially Hogwarts, and it is two things, again, that do kind of tie together. And these two things are the moving staircases and the moving portraits. if you think of that huge, long, it's very tall. It's a very tall hall with all the moving staircases and, you know, all the portraits. Without the staircases and portraits, that would mean nothing. That room would mean nothing. And I think portraits in particular, I think, are much more widespread. Of course, the moving staircases, I'm sure there are some moving staircases somewhere in the Wizarding World, but Hogwarts is where they're mostly at. And I think it's a very unimportant part of the story. But I think it's similar to the Great Hall and Sorting Hat in that they are connected to every part of the story. And really, they're kind of the bridge. This is a funny thing right here. They're literally the bridge sometimes between two places, but they're also the bridge between the beginning and the end. So I think that's a very important thing to note. And these portraits are everywhere. I mean, the moving portraits, some of the most important moments we have are with portraits. So let's talk about the staircases just real quick. So the staircases, we are introduced to them in the very, very first book. And it's kind of a strange moment. Everyone, like the trios on the staircase, starts to move. And they're like, oh my gosh, what's happening? And Hermione says, oh, the staircase is moving. And Harry and Ron are like, what the heck? And she's like, yeah, the staircases move. Come on. So that's the first time we really are introduced to these moving staircases, and we don't really begin to, like, once we kind of begin to understand that these things happen, I think that's kind of the first kind of view into the magic of the castle, because then we can really understand, okay, well, the staircases move. Does my staircase move? Absolutely not. But these ones do. That's just how magical this place is. And then kind of thinking forward a little bit, of course, they appear in other films with, I mean, The Prisoner of Azkaban. They're pretty prominently featured when, you know, Sirius is on the run and he slashes the moving portrait. And that's a connection right there. He slashes the fat lady and she runs away. And, you know, there's a staircase and all that. Like, all that, you know, that's all connected, first of all. But then thinking even farther ahead to the Deathly Hallows, you know, when Harry is moving through the castle, he uses the moving staircases. And I think that those moments, I think these two moments in particular, when he's, you know, going to get the diadem, and the first time the trio, he was standing on the moving staircase with the trio, you know, I think those are two, like, very, very connected moments. They're almost next to each other, despite the fact that they're so far apart, they feel like the same moment. And I mean, almost, I don't think we really had a moment with him, like, thinking on a moving staircase, but just, you know, the thought of him with Ron and Hermione in the first book. They're happy, they're whatever, you know, it's all light out and the candles are lit and the staircase is moving and they're like, oh my gosh, it's a moving staircase. And then flash forward, you know, Harry's, you know, on his final march. This is like it, you know. He's had so much fun at the castle. It's where he's grown up. It's where he's met all of his friends and family and, you know, where his life has really begun. And also, where's life's going to end? I think the moving staircase is not exactly a symbol of that, but I think it symbolizes the bridge between his two lives, you know, between the happy life he had before and kind of the abysmal, you know, the gray life he has now. But, you know, the question has to be asked, which one's more important? Would he rather still be living in that golden bubble? I don't think so. So I think the staircase is a good symbol of the fact that he is different, but it's not exactly bad. So the portraits are also kind of tying into this. And if you kind of, you know, really think about it, without the moving portraits, I think there's so much missing. There's so much missing because, I mean, the one thing pictures don't do is change. And I think that's kind of what the, you know, the playoff here is. The magic of a moving portrait is that it does the one thing it can't do. So I think it's a very on the nose, you know, inclusion in the story. But also, we also learn a lot of good information from moving portraits. And I think another good thing to mention is, you know, well, for example, the fat lady, how you get into the Gryffindor common room is a portrait. And also, in the headmaster's office, all the headmasters are in portraits. And at the very end, Dumbledore is in his very own portrait. And I think what this is kind of showing us is that, you know, in the Wizarding World, someone can die, but they're not completely gone. Of course, in the Muggle world, that might be true. It's much harder to reach someone when they're dead. sorry to say. But in the wizarding world, if you just paint a portrait of someone, that's kind of, you know, that's kind of this person. And you kind of just have captured them in the portrait. So I think the more than just, you know, thinking of, okay, well, they move and that's pretty cool, I guess. You know, that's just Hogwarts. That's magic, you know. And that's definitely part of it. I think we shouldn't, you know, down the fact that moving portraits are magic. And that's what Hogwarts is. But also, Hogwarts is kind of representing the family and the connection between the death and the life of the world. Because that's, again, you know, kind of bridging the gap between the beginning and the end. That's where people like Harry first figured out about magic. Of course, he didn't just, like, figure out, but he really saw it at the first time at Hogwarts, and he saw it for the last time at Hogwarts, in a sense. Of course, this is, you know, very, very speaking generally. And the portraits are a great example of that, because it shows that, you know, for example, the headmasters, they die, but they still live on. And all these moving portraits, you know, it's kind of showing everyone has their own little world, and I think that's kind of what Hogwarts is trying to exemplify. Also, you know, it's well, giving the skills to all students to kind of make their own life, but also, you know, everyone's separate. But I think also the fact that you can move into other portraits is also kind of showing that everyone's in their own world, but you can't you can share worlds sometimes. So I think the portraits are just a good kind of, you know, nod, a good kind of wink at the students for their hard work. So that's the moving staircases and the moving portraits, two very important parts of Hogwarts that I think we would be living in a strange world in Hogwarts if we didn't have them. So that's why they are included on the list. But with that, there are a few more things I want to discuss in this episode. So let's move on. Next up, we have got Quidditch. And Quidditch is, I mean, one of the most important parts of the castle. And I think it would be a waste of an episode if I did not put Quidditch in here. We think about Hogwarts, immediately we think about Quidditch. I mean, they are side by side all the time. They are so closely related to each other, and Quidditch is where Harry finds his passion, is where he finds, you know, where he comes alive. And broomsticks is kind of where a lot of things are centered around, and, you know, he can use his skills on the broom to help him a lot in the future books, like in The Goblet of Fire, the first task, when he and Dumbledore fly back on broomsticks to the astronomy tower, and also when he flies out on a broomstick at the Room of Requirement. Like, the broomstick and Quidditch is connected to his life, and it is a core part of his life, even though he's not playing it all the time, which I'm sure he wish he was, but he's not. So the reason why I say Quidditch is because, again, kind of thinking back to the themes of this episode and kind of why we're making this episode, without Quidditch, would the castle be the same? I don't think you even need to take a minute to think about it. That's a no. That's a no from me. I mean, Quidditch is kind of the center of a lot of what goes on in the castle. I think if we didn't have Quidditch, we would really have to think, you know, how could we, well, first of all, how could the story move forward? I mean, Quidditch is a great way to convey a lot, and, you know, through, well, sport, but also, like, for example, in the first book, when Quirrell tries to curse Harry off of his broom, Hermione sees Snape doing it, and, you know, she's, oh my gosh, it's Snape, and that starts their, you know, whole thing against Snape, and then as the story goes on, they realize Snape isn't such a bad guy. So that's kind of, you know, for example, that's the start of their Snape hatred. It also is where Harry makes close friends, and it's where he learns how to lead, and it's where he really just gains so much life apart from the classroom. I think he's kind of drowning in a lot of his coursework. He's just drowning. So without Quidditch, where would he really be, you know? And a lot of that is just, it's just so central. And I think Quidditch is also just like, it's such a huge part. It's really a cornerstone of magic, because it's not only a Hogwarts sport, but it's also an everyone sport. It is a worldwide wizarding sport. And I think that's really one of the things why it is so important to Hogwarts, because it is so important to everyone. And of course, the Quidditch World Cup, things like that. The Quidditch World Cup is such a important part of the fourth book that I think there would have to be a huge event that would replace the Quidditch World Cup. If we didn't have Quidditch as a whole, there would have to be some kind of, you know, conveyor to Harry's discovery of the Darth Mark, and, you know, the us meeting Barty Crouch Sr. and all that. You know, like, how would that play out without Quidditch as kind of the center here? So that's something that we definitely have to think of. And then also kind of also thinking in the fourth book with Cedric Diggory, we first meet him on the Quidditch pitch, and I think we really get introduced to who he is in The Prisoner of Azkaban when it's that horrible storm game. The Dementors are flying everywhere. Harry and Cedric are flying after the snitch, and Harry sees the Dementor, and oh my gosh, he falls off his broom, and Cedric gets the snitch. But I think what really shows his character is he tries to call it off. He says, no, 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 I caught the snitch, but that's unfair. Harry fell off his broom, but they say, no, you already caught it. Sorry, the game's over. You won. And I think that shows just who he is as a person, who Cedric is, and it's a wonderful person who I think has the right ideas in mind. So, first of all, good for Cedric, but also, without Quidditch, how would we have learned that? It would have to have been a heavily manufactured situation, and yes, I understand that all the situations are heavily manufactured, but with this, I mean, especially because he has a win. He's the star. He's handed this victory, and he's done this great thing for his house, and he's trying to take it back. I think that just shows that he is just such a good person. And without Quidditch, I think it would be difficult to show the same thing. So I hope you're convinced here, because in my mind, Quidditch is one of the most important parts of the story. So I think there's really a hole in the story and in Hogwarts if we didn't have Quidditch to think of. So there you go. There's one more quick thing I want to mention in this episode. So let's move on. And that quick thing is the last thing that makes Hogwarts Hogwarts is all the horrible things that happen there, all the deadly events, all the mishaps and chamber openings and heists and burglars and infiltrators and spies and imposters and attacks. And I am not even joking. This is the final thing on the list. We're going to talk about it quickly, but is Hogwarts really Hogwarts if they don't have their, you know, yearly staff death? If they don't have their yearly, like little fun tragedy that happens? No, of course it's not. If the Chamber of Secrets didn't open, I probably wouldn't have come, because the drama, boy, oh boy, do I live for the drama at Hogwarts. And I think this is a point that I hate to make, but is Hogwarts really Hogwarts if something horrible doesn't happen? And the answer is no. But that doesn't have to be a bad thing, because it shows that is a place with a lot of good people, and it is a place that is a great place of learning, and some of the Wizarding World's best and brightest are there, and it is a attractive target for people who wish to do the Wizarding World harm. And you might think, well, that's kind of horrible, because why would they go for Hogwarts? Well, it's because it's all the good people that are there, like we're just saying. So I think Hogwarts should take it as a compliment, despite the fact that it really is bad for morale that, you know, they get attacked so often. But, you know, all these horrible, deadly attacks, all these things happening to the castle, I think, as bad as it is, I think it goes to show that it's full of good people doing good things, learning how to be good wizards and witches. And without all the things on this list, I don't think Hogwarts would ever be the same, because there are certain things, certain little glints, you know, certain colors. If a color of the rainbow disappeared, the world would look very different. So that's kind of the message, the takeaway that I hope you have gained from this, that every part of Hogwarts counts. As small as it may seem, you know, the staircase moves, woohoo, but it is still a huge part of the story, and if it changed, I think we would be in a very different place. So, there you have it. Thanks a lot, I guess. Hogwarts, that's a great place to be. I'm so glad you have your wonderfulness and all the magical things, and despite the fact that a horrible thing has to happen every year here to really feel at home, I think it still counts. So, Hogwarts, you're a real one. And that's a good place to end the episode. I would never have thought that I would end the episode on a Hogwarts, you're a real one. But I am so happy that I did. Great. That's so fantastic. Thank you everyone for listening. I had a blast recording this. This is always fun to talk about Hogwarts and really what makes Hogwarts tick. So that is a fantastic end to the episode. If you want to reach out, please do not hesitate. It is always my pleasure to communicate with listeners. You can email me at thepotterdiscussion@gmail.com. That is thepotterdiscussion@gmail.com. And thepotterdiscussion.com is another great place to do that. If you like what you hear, consider subscribing so you never miss a new episode of the show. And you can also leave a review. 5 stars on your favorite podcast app would go a long way, and it helps other listeners find the show. You can also tell someone else about the show, because chances are if you like the show, someone else will too. That really helps me out, and it spreads the message of Harry Potter, which is always a great thing. Again, I want to thank you all for listening. I had a wonderful time recording. I will see you next week for 2:30. And with that, I think that is it. As always, remember that happiness can be found even in the darkest of times, if one only remembers to turn on the light. I will see you all later.
This was the Potter Discussion.